peaceful when I'm left alone. I've always been an eagle, been a while since I have flown. My claws are sharp as ever, so's my eagle eye. Something's gonna go to ground when the eagle flies. Lately I've heard rumors that the eagle may be lame. Just because I've been idle don't mean that I'm tame. You've jeopardized my freedom, my natural place to roost. I can fly when I have to.
You better believe it, when that eagle flies and you see that shadow coming across, yeah, watch out, Tommy's on the move. Hey, it's January the 26th, 2016, and we're here in the bunker. Terrible Tommy, right here in north central Indiana. It's cool outside. We had big winds last night, but it's warming up. It's warming up a little bit. Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show and also for prisoners and things like that. You can send their donations to the prisoners. You can go up to our website, which is not quite back up yet. Incidentally, that wasn't sabotage. It was simply the server company was making major changes, and we had to change some things too. So it wasn't Morris D's D's that caused it. It was a normal situation, so it'll be back up pretty soon. But you can go up there and get these addresses for the prisoners. But if it's a federal, if you're sending money to a federal prison, you have to send it through the office there in Iowa, and that's up on the website. And if you're sending them to states, you have to send them certain ways in certain places, and sometimes it's a little different. So you got to figure that out too. But if you send it to me, well, I'll do all that hard work for you, and I won't. I promise you, I won't buy beer with it. I don't know whether you got my little TV spot that I send out. We're doing some testing here. I'd like to do a longer show, and I'm working on it. I got a compression program here, and I bought a new camera for my Dell PC. I've got a built-in camera on the Mac, but trying to compress it is a little more difficult on the Mac. Now, I know you guys out there that know Macs are going to say, you're crazy, it's easy. Well, anyhow, I want to get it so I can compress it on the PC and maybe send you out a half an hour, at least a half an hour show on video, and you can see my lovely puss. Well, you know, people thought it was the end of the world because the snow came down back east, and it did come down quite a bit, but that's not much of an emergency. I don't think there's not much death involved, but I do know that back in the old days, you'd see kids and teenagers all over the place out shoveling snow and making money. But you don't see that anymore. You don't see any kids go out and scoop snow for money. And I was listening to one story, kids making 20 bucks an hour, he's working 17 hours a day shoveling snow. Kid's going to be a millionaire. But it's sad that white kids are not encouraged or kicked in the ass by their parents to get out and work. Well, let's get back to a pessimist guide to history, and let's go to 1793 to 1794, the Reign of Terror. After 4 years of revolt against the monarchy, the Republican government of France was itself dangerously close to falling victim to the social upheaval that had brought it into being. Radical elements threatened to tear apart the faction-ridden government from within. while revolts by monarchists and invasions by foreign armies tried to reinstate the recent deposed king. Well, I studied that French Revolution quite a bit, and both sides have good points and both sides have bad points. Now, number one, the public doesn't get to the point of revolt until there's been a lot of problems. And usually it, because usually people don't, are not prone to revolt. They got to get pushed pretty hard. And of course, the poor people of France and Paris were very, very poor. And the king and queen, of course, lived like kings and queens. Now, the right wing will go on, like I used to read Nesta Webster's books on the French Revolution, and she sort of painted it like the peasant class was just being led by the Illuminati and so forth. But just like the Russian Revolution, there's a reason for a revolution. And the average person or the peon or the peasant's not going to revolt unless it's really bad. So when you people say, well, it was the Bolsheviks. Well, the Bolsheviks would have never had a chance if the people had been was being treated reasonably decent in Russia or in France. Same thing. When people get their ass up against the wall too bad, somebody's going to come along and talk them into revolting. The right wing keeps saying, oh, those, you know, it was those nefarious guys over there. Yeah, it's all these dirty guys, the Bolsheviks and the all these other groups that cause it. Well, no, they don't cause it, but they take advantage of it. Or they say, well, okay, the people are ready to revolt, so we'll lead them. And usually they lead them down the primrose path, but still, if the people were treated reasonably decent and there was the money was spread around enough, the people wouldn't revolt. They wouldn't do it. So anyhow, like I say, I've studied both sides of that French Revolution. Interesting that Napoleon, who gained victory, and he was thought of highly because he won a battle down with the Italians. There was a bridge they tried to get across, and then Napoleon got his troops across, and he became a hero. And during the height of the reign of so-called terror, you know, when poor people get violent, it's always terror, you know, just like today in the Middle East. Our government bombs their houses, bombs their schools, bombs their infrastructure, and they finally get pissed off and start bombing back, and they, oh, they're terrorists. They're terrorists. What the hell? Anyhow, I was reading in the one book where Napoleon was standing there in the city square watching all this going on with all this revolt around him and decided to stop it. So he got an army together and stopped it and brought back order to France. It was a dictatorship, of course, but that was the only way he could bring all the violence and so forth to a stop. And that's what'll happen here if things keep going. The people will sooner or later, because there's too many factions in this country, too many religions, too many parties, too many super rich people, for it not sooner or later to come to a revolt. And then the revolt will get very, very bad, very bad. And ultimately, a type of a dictator will take over. It's just the way it goes. It's natural. Anyhow, reading on here, the execution of King Louis the 16th on January 21st, 1793, presaged the beginning of a new and disastrous phase in the revolution. The bloody reign of terror, I'd call it the bloody reign of payback. And you have very little idea of the torture and rich terrorism inflicted on the poor people in France. So when they start yelling about terrorism, like I say, it, you know, that works both ways. Perhaps the change arose because of attacks on France by foreign armies created widespread fear among the masses. I don't think that was the reason at all. Already, such fears had helped spark the barbarous September massacre in 1792, when the mobs took helpless royalists from their prison cells and cold-bloodedly slaughtered them. Or perhaps the change came about because of the violent passions unleashed by the revolution had finally gone beyond all reasonable control. Well, you got to study what the royalists were doing to the peasants. You know, there wasn't much of a middle class at all. I mean, the horrible conditions that the French, English, Germans, and all those people lived in during the Middle Ages and so forth, and that period of time, is unbelievable. I mean, hardly anybody talks about it. Whatever the reason, the popular hatred and fear gave new power to radical elements in the revolutionary government. Then, in early April 1793, the Committee of Public Safety was established to try all enemies of the revolution. A loose category of people encompassed priests, aristocrats, immigrants, royalists, and former government officials. A leading radical, Maximilian Robespierre, took over leadership of the committee in July, and therefore the bloody reign of terror began in earnest. Well, I call it the bloody reign of retribution myself. On September the 5th, the revolutionary government officially adopted the slogan, Let us institute terror as the order of the day. Soon the committee was empowered to try any person suspected of opposing the revolution and to convict them without right of appeal. A law of suspects passed on September the 17th, widening the powers of the committee even further, granting such a vague definition of suspects that virtually anyone could be arrested. Well, that's the problem with revolution. Many times the perpetrators, it goes too far. But why? If you didn't have the revolution in the first place, it couldn't go too far. So it all goes back, just like all this crap in the Middle East goes back to George Bush Jr. and Cheney and all these crooked congressmen and so forth that rah-rahed the occupation of Iraq. And one thing just leads to another, the domino effect. And now we're suffering for it. We suffered for it with the 9/11 catastrophe. So if you don't want to get your ass kicked, don't keep kicking other people's asses. In Paris, the prison soon overflowed with thousands of suspects. Priests, nuns, immigrants, and aristocrats were rounded up, locked into crowded, disease-ridden prisons. Well, the same place that the other peasantry were locked up before. They just turned one set of prisoners loose and put another set of prisoners in. Then, to make room for more suspects, convents, churches, and hotels were confiscated and converted to prisons. Those convicted by the tribunal were sent directly to the guillotine, which is actually a pretty humane way to get it if you're going to get it. I'd rather have the guillotine than be a firing squad or a hangman's noose. Set up in the center of Paris at the Place de la Révolution, a French adaptation of devices used elsewhere, the guillotine had been introduced by the revolutionary government in 1792 as a more humane means of executing criminals. Now, however, it was to become an instrument of mass extermination. Well, this guy's carrying that on too far. It wasn't mass extermination. There was a lot of people guillotined, but it wasn't mass like they exaggerate today. Convicted on even the slightest pretext, were marched to the guillotine's raised platform, where they were forced to put their necks into the machine's blood-spattered wooden yoke. The condemned suffered a last moment of terror before the whole condemned suffered a last moment of terror before the whole platform rumbled at the downward slide of the guillotine's heavy steel blade. Well, I advocate that for this country, the guillotine. I think there's a whole lot of congressmen and senators and ex-presidents and all that kind of stuff that if they're brought to justice, if they're ever brought to justice, I think the guillotine would be just right for them. Carts waited beside the guillotine to carry away the heads of the decapitated torsos of the executed. It's just that cutting somebody's heads off is something that's been the most feared thing. It's mostly in the brain. I mean, you know, it's no fun to have your head cut off, but it's no fun to be shot or put in an electric chair or gassed and all that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, crowds of peasants and workers gathered to sing, dance, and drink while they watched the slaughter of the priests and aristocrats. Well, I have no problem with the judicial killing of priests or nuns or anybody else if they were against the people. And there's plenty of pervert priests and nuns over the years that deserve to have their heads chopped off. Outside of Paris, the terror went on without the benefit of the guillotine, and in Nantes, Jean-Baptiste Carrier persecuted suspects with a ferocious zeal between 1793 and January 1794. He ordered the drowning of at least 2,000. Yeah, they called that the Revolutionary Marriage. They put all these men and women on a barge in the river and tie them together face to face, and then they'd sink the barge. I remember reading that, and I think that was Nesta Webster's book. But yeah, here again, you got to understand how over decades and decades of being treated horribly and starved and raped and pillaged and everything else, the common people finally rise up and then they go berserk. It's happened many times. The suspects, pregnant women and children among them, were crowded into the hulls of ships that were then deliberately capsized in the Loire River. Actually, it was barges, drowning everyone on board. Guards chopped off the arms of those who tried to escape or held the condemned underwater with boat hooks. Corpses littered the riverbanks. Soon the water became too contaminated to drink, and disease spread throughout the city, killing the tormentors as well as the tormented. Meanwhile, untold numbers died in the squalid prisons. To his credit, however, Robespierre recalled the perpetrators of this indiscriminate atrocities. While it might seem impossible to make the terror any harsher, a new law was passed on June 10, 1794. Did just that. The suspects no longer had a right to a trial, and the convictions were allowed without any evidence of guilt being presented at all. Virtually everyone brought before the tribunal was sentenced to die. The new system had the desired effect. There were more executions within 6 weeks than in all the previous year. Executioners announced the names of the prisoners about to be executed, laughing while adding Gibb, quote, "These are they who have gained prizes in the lottery of Saint Guillotine," unquote. In Paris, 60 people were guillotined per day. The residents near the Place de la Revolution in Paris had to abandon their homes because of the unbearable stench of the blood. "Things go well," one official wrote. "See the heads fall like slates." Finally, though the tables turned, and a secret opposition to Robespierre began to develop. After using the machinery of terror to eliminate his opponents on the right and the left in the revolutionary government, Robespierre himself was arrested and executed on July 28, 1794. No doubt to the relief of thousands, that brought a halt to the orgy of hate. But not before some 17,000 people had been executed. Well, that's probably a drop in the bucket compared to the thousands and hundreds of thousands of peasants who had been starved to death and slaughtered over a period of decades. Many others among the estimated 300,000 to 500,000 people imprisoned that year died of disease and abuse in the prisons. And so name of Robespierre goes down in history beside Caligula, Genghis Khan, and Ivan the Terrible. Well, all of those people, there were two sides of the story, and you rarely get both sides of the story. The worst people in history were never totally bad, and they had many times good reason to do some of the things they did. But the ruling class write the books. They own the publishing companies, and the governments influence what's written in those books. So whenever you hear about terrorists and so forth, you've got to try to get the other side of the story. I mean, why? Why? My message is to the ruling class right now that are controlling so much of the money, in not only here but in the world. Just remember the French Revolution. Similar things could happen any time. And once it starts, there's no place where you can hide. Because when Tommy thinks of all the fratricidal wars that the ruling class has pushed us into, all of the drudgery of the white working class and the victimization by the instigation of the black plague of Negroes in this country that commit horrible, atrocious crimes all the time against white people, and all the things that have been caused by the upper class and the political parties and so forth, I see no reason why they should not be punished. I see no reason. And don't give me that crap about the causing a class struggle. There's always been a class struggle. But the job of the people with all the dough is to convince you that there is no class struggle. There's only two classes. The minority of filthy, filthy rich, and the majority of poor people and lower middle class. That's all there is. And if you don't think there is a class struggle, you better start reading history. And while you're at it, read Might is Right about once a month. And read it slowly. Well, first you had pessimism. Now I'll give you a little bit of cynicism. Yeah, according to Terrible Tommy. I'm tired of being unable to buy clothing that doesn't have writing and printing all over it. Insipid sayings, pseudo-wisdoms, cute slogans, team logos, designer names, brand trademarks, small business ego trips. The marketing pigs and advertising swine have turned us all into walking billboards. You see some asshole walking by and he's got on a Fruity Dodgers hat and a Hard Rock Cafe t-shirt. Of course you can't see the shirt if he's wearing that hot shit Chicago Bulls jacket, the one that only 50 million other loser jock sniffers own. And since this cretinous sports fan consumer zombie is completely for sale to anyone, he rounds out his ensemble with the FedEx sneakers, Value Jet socks, Wall Street Journal sweatpants, a Starbucks jockstrap, and a Microsoft condom with Bill Gates' head on the end. No one in this country owns his personal appearance anymore. America has become a nation of obedient consumers, actively participating in their own degradations. And that's the pessimist saying, or the cynical saying, from Tommy today. Straight to you from the Pope of the Church, by George Carlin. Yeah, there you go. The Israeli Jews are bragging about where you can go in Israel to get a good education. Compare that to what happens in this country, where you have to go in debt $50,000 to get an elementary school education. Aneris Elite Academy is the answer, a science and technology scholarship program for high school students. Aneris is recruiting top students from across the world to participate in this advanced educational track affiliated with World ORT and the Technion, Israel Institute of Technology. Send your child to learn from leading professors and developers who will challenge them to be the world's next top innovators and researchers. Give them the best of both worlds, a top Jewish education and a vigorous, cutting-edge education. The best part? The whole program is free. There you go, young Nazis. If you want a good education, keep your mouth shut, don't have any tattoos, don't belong to anything, go to Israel and go to the this outfit that they've got over there, this Andreas Elite Academy. And after you get done with that, go to the Israel Institute of Technology on a poverty scholarship. Wise up, boys and girls. Outsmart the people. Outsmart these guys. Yeah. Well, if you want a free education, you need one, and you can get one, go to Kenya in Africa if they've got it. What the hell? You got to think like a revolutionary. You got to use everything, every weapon you can get. So don't be proud and all that kind of stuff. Just keep your mouth shut and get what you need. You know, several people have advocated going into the inner city in the most pitiful place and carve out like almost small farms, cheap houses, farm, grow food. I'm going to play you this. This is the epic story of about 20 families that uprooted from suburbia and made their homes in one of the most blighted neighborhoods in the inner city in Kansas City, Missouri. The urban farming guys are a band of pioneers that are creating a sustainable community out of a slum. Like mad scientists, they are constantly on the hunt for the most innovative, accessible, low-tech solutions for a self-sustaining community. Among other things, see them grow 2,000 pounds of tilapia in a space the size of your living room. Meet these visionaries beating a path for communities and villages to thrive in any economy. See, there you go. You got the balls and the muscle and the intuition. Well, you can go right into these inner cities and carve out your little empire. When I was on the train a few months ago, going up to Chicago to get on an airplane to go to Israel, I noticed hundreds of pretty nice houses along the tracks that had been abandoned because people wanted to get away from the Negroes. A lot of them were burnt out, too. But you could go into these places with some, you know, all these skinheads are supposed to have all these balls. Why don't they do that? You know, instead of walking around and strutting around on the street, getting drunk and jumping on somebody. If they're tough and rough and could do it, go into these inner cities and carve out an area. Do it, yeah.
You ask, who are these guys? We are the living experiment. This is the epic story of a band of pioneers. Several families who have uprooted from comfortable suburbia and made their homes for good in one of the most blighted zip codes in the U.S. 64127, Likens Neighborhood, Inner City, Kansas City. Each of us, standing with our neighbors, believe there is hope. But we know that money alone will not solve the problem.
Gunshots down the street, and looks like they got our tree pretty good. Right there.
We are called to put our very lives into the mix for the sake of the next generation. Our passion is to see life cultivated in the urban core. In the following episodes, you will see our journey as we dive into everything from urban fish farming to reducing crime rates in the neighborhood. From job creation all the way to getting healthy food into the hands of everyday people. We are about sharing knowledge. We are searching the ends of the earth to find the most reproducible, low-tech, self-sustaining, high-yield methods of urban farming. And we're sharing it with you as we journey to build up our community here in the urban core. Stay tuned as we push the limits of small spaces, small budgets, and off-grid scenarios. See us try to grow 2,000 pounds of tilapia fish in a space smaller than your living room. Can we produce fish and vegetables in high yield, year-round, without high energy costs? Can we produce enough of our own energy on-site with biogas produced from our fish waste and food scraps to run our urban farm? What about a third world country where the electricity is intermittent or non-existent? We love the grid, but could we live without it? Watch as we take this technology even lower as we get a prototype ready to go to India fall of 2011.
We could feed the nations with duckweed. You feed the duckweed to the fish, you eat the fish, and it's all free. This stuff just multiplies. We're going to take this duckweed frozen and stick it in there just like it is. And the fish just love it.
It grows about 40 times faster than corn. We come and harvest half of it off, come back in 2 days, and it's ready to harvest again.
It'll be gone in about 30 seconds. Right now it's thawing. They're just eating it like mad.
Can we produce all the feed for our livestock on site?
Come check this out. This here is our worm bin. It has about 20,000 worms in it. And this here is blended up food scraps, frozen. And we blend it up for a reason so they can eat a lot faster. These worms double every 3 months, and they eat their weight in food every day.
This is what we're after right here, guys. Worm poop. Super nutrient rich. We use it as part of our organic potting soil mix.
Could a half acre plot in the inner city become self-sustainable and function off the grid?
These chickens are 20 eggs a day.
Follow us as we construct an aquaponic food producing machine from everyday materials at a fraction of what you could buy it for. Here we are growing vegetables and fish together right in the water. This is a symbiotic relationship where the vegetables clean the water for the fish and the fish fertilize the vegetables, all without soil. And we don't waste anything.
Every day we get a load of manure off these tanks where the fish waste gets settled out. We come with a bucket and we get a bunch of free fertilizer.
Then we take the fish manure and pour it into the biodigester to create methane gas as it composts over the next 7 weeks. This gas can be burned to heat the greenhouse or put in a generator to create electricity. And what about the neighborhood question? Can we come together in the inner city and lower crime rates, create jobs, and nourish a seed for the future? Can we provide a better opportunity to the 13-year-old than the allure of fast money and the friendship found in a gang? Can we work together to grow our urban core into a place of hope for the hopeless? Here we purchase this rundown old school building on the block. Can we bring it back to life? Follow the story as we build on the potential and creativity of our youth. Follow us as we try to answer these tough questions as a neighborhood, grassroots style. These videos are made to empower. They are made to actually put the technology into your hands step by step. Can it be done?
We believe that you
are a part of the solution.
Stay tuned.
Sharing knowledge, feeding nations.
Well, there's a challenge for you young people and even older people because it's being done. Now, obviously, these people have somewhat of a liberal bent, but still, the basic information is there. You can go in there and carve yourself out. Like they got a whole big old school building that they got. And you can get these houses for a dollar a lot of times. And cities are selling off abandoned houses all the time. Very cheap. So let's see a challenge like that for all you skinheads and other people. Get out there and do that. Quit wasting your time screwing around. Now, you can see the video that goes along with this on Brass Check TV. And you can see the video of how they were doing all this stuff. Well, it looks like Papa's in trouble. Pope Francis invites, he welcomes the Iran president to the Vatican. The first meeting between a pope and an Iranian leader since 1999 boosts Iran's status and nuclear deal. How about that? Eat your heart out, Washington. People are doing things without you. Well, this militia thing is slowly grinding towards a bad end. I'm quoting out, it's taking this, editing this out here. One pair who have been regulars at the camp spoke as if the revolution has already begun, but it was hard to separate fact from fiction, from fantasy from delusion. One claimed asymmetricals are joining up. By that he meant lone wolves radicalized over the internet were flocking to the Bundy Crusade. He said 300 to 400 militia members were bunked out in nearby towns and homes ready to strike, and local law enforcement and the sheriff's deputies in other counties were providing covert support. He also asserted there were plans to move on Bureau of Land Management holdings in 20 different counties. Well, you know what that is, same old bullshit. You get it. All the wingnuts flock to these kind of things, just like they did to North Dakota up there. And but there wasn't many gravitated to that one. But you get a few guys coming in, and a lot of times they're federal undercover people agitating and blowing off steam. We're going to kill everybody, or we're going to have 300 or 400 people here, and we got sheriffs on our side and all that stuff. And they pour gasoline all over the ground, and all it takes is one person to light a match, and it all goes up in flame. I go on here. The pair warned, "It's going to come to bloodshed," unquote. And when it does, it will be officer against officer as police and soldiers join their cause. The two were eager to discuss how our food, water, medicine, and energy are all poisoned. And when the sodium fluoride in the water combines with the mercury, thimerosal vaccines, it leads to brain changes, unquote. The discussion was not complete without a brief foray into the 9/11 conspiracy theories and talk of other mysterious murders. Let's see. Given Waco, given Ruby Ridge, given the presidential election this year, it's simple to guess the government's strategy towards the Bundy militia takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. Wait them out. Maybe they will get tired and collapse or descend into infighting. Well, that's probably pretty likely, because this kind of things usually do end up in infighting. Well, I hope there's no lone wolves that listen to my voice that are running out there to get involved in this thing, because that is not what I advocate. No, 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 no. I see here, post Amsterdam, European Union law enforcement officials have concluded it is only a question of where and when, not if, another so-called terrorist attack with mass casualties will be unleashed on the continent. The European Union on Monday launched a new law enforcement center to coordinate the fight against violent extremism, saying Europe faces the most significant terrorist threat in over 10 years. Well, when they say against a violent extremism, the extremism is thousands and thousands of migrants moving into Europe. That's where your extremism. They're talking about fighting the reaction to these people moving in. They just need to turn them around and point them the other way, and also quit droning the Middle East and get our troops out of there. It all would work out okay if we did that. Quote, there is every reason to expect that ISIS-inspired terrorist or another religiously inspired terrorist group will undertake a terrorist attack somewhere in your... How many times in one paragraph can you say terrorist? But particularly in France, intended to cause mass casualties among the civilian population. Well, why did you leave all these people into your country in the first place? I don't mean just now. I mean before you let all these Algerians and everybody into your country. And then you wonder why you're having problems. Europol, the EU-wide agency for law enforcement cooperation, said in a report referring to an alternative acronym for the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS. This is in addition to the threat of lone wolf actor attacks, which has not diminished. Well, of course not. Of course not. You're just lucky there hadn't been more of it. I mean, you know, if I was, like I say, if I was a Middle Eastern last few years and you're bombing my houses and killing my kids and destroying my town and killing all of the food, no food to eat and anything, of course you'd either become a lone wolf or you'd just sit there and starve to death. And here's a woman that's got it right. Quote, I hate the recruiters, the military recruiters, says Geraldine Hannigan in tears. Quote, because they don't have the courage to go there, but they have the courage to send our young white people over there. Unquote. Quote, Muslims in France are poorer on average than the rest of the population. Their kids go to schools that are not as high quality as the rest of the population. They live in neighborhoods that are not as nice as the rest of the population, unquote, he said. The truth of the matter is it sucks to be a Muslim in France. Well, why did they let them in? You had to know this would happen. You'd have to be an idiot not to know what would happen. Get them out. Get them out. Now, what happened to my... Oh, there it is. I mean, like the little thing says, let me play it again.
Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!
Let's play that again. I like that one. I really like that one. Well, I can't get it any louder, but you get the point. The same people that caused the problem try to blame everybody else for causing the problem. You notice how you never hear any right-wingers or Republicans much, or even Democrats, talking about what caused all this bullshit with the occupation of Iraq and right on down the line and the killing off of the leaders of these other countries in the Middle East. And then wonder why we're in deep shit. You don't hear them talk about it at all. Well, maybe I've got a chance to be in the revolution when it comes yet. The number of Americans living beyond their 100th birthday has been climbing steadily since the start of the 21st century. A new CDC report which tracked mortality among 100-somethings starting in the 2000 sometime. Anyhow, shows that while centurions are still uncommon, the number of Americans above the age of 100 has increased more than 43% from 50,281 a decade and a half ago to 72,197 in 2014. There's hope for us. Arriba, arriba, revolution. It's really a sign of continued increase in life expectancy and longevity, and a sign of public health efforts and modern medicine over the last two centuries that have contributed to this, said Dr. Maria Torella Carney, Chief of Geriatric and Palliative Medicine at Northwell Health in New Hyde Park, New York City. So, boy, we're going to have the over-the-hill gang, man, right in the front lines of the coming revolution. Yeah!
There is growing outrage over a photo of six Phoenix high school students spelling out a racial slur. Here's the photo. It shows six senior girls in black shirts with gold letters spelling out the N-word. According to CBS affiliate KPHO, the district said the picture had been intended to be shared with just one of the students' boyfriends, who's black. It was sent on Snapchat and now has gone viral. This was the original human letter chain where the class spelled out, best you have ever seen, class of 2016. The photo has spurred protests and an online petition demanding the students involved be expelled and the principal be fired. District Superintendent Kenneth Baca issued an apology at a news conference Monday.
My heart is heavy that today we have to stand before you to address an issue that's very real in this world. And that situation is racial prejudice, racial slurs that oftentimes we have become insensitive to. And I recognize and realize that as we face this, while I would rather not have to do that in this context, we have an opportunity as a community to face this together, to address it, and to say there is no place whatsoever for any type of racial slurs or any type of racial prejudice in our community, in our state, and in our nation. And we will not tolerate anyone promoting any type of hate
nigger,
any type of racial slur.
One of the girls who posed in the picture apologized during the rally at school Monday, saying she's not a racist, and she's asking everyone for forgiveness.
Facebook post that went out a little over an hour ago from the Naval Medical Center say, telling everybody to run, hide, or fight. Run, hide, or fight. That was the message. As there were first reports of the active shooter came in a little after 8 o'clock this morning near the the basement outside and building number 26. A barracks for wounded sailors and Marines, a gym there as well. And so that is what we're trying to confirm right now, as is the massive police and law enforcement presence that you're seeing on the ground.
We know military police and canines right now are going through building 26, trying to give the all clear as they search whether for an active shooter, just to make people in the facility are safe. We know that all clear has not been given right now. I know, Dan, you mentioned the fact that he's been communicating with somebody on Twitter. I've been seeing some of those communications. Yeah. They have not been given that all clear just yet. They're still being told to shelter in place. It is called a code white. So everybody there still in that building 26 are sheltering in place.
Yeah, good news that the children are safe. And if you are listening and if you are sheltered in place there and you can call us, please, please do. Okay, so we have Ashley Jacobs. She is on the ground right now. Ashley, what can you tell us?
Dan and Michelle, it's, you know, really important. You keep mentioning people that are worried about their loved ones who may be in place here. We have Juan Mack. He showed up on scene just a little bit. Come on over here, Juan. Your daughter is here in the area. Kind of just walk me through how you found out about this and the steps on how you got here and what you see.
Okay. Well, basically, I was on my way to work. She gave me a text right away. Said there's an active shooter at the Navy Hospital, so I was within the area within 5 minutes, and I texted her back and told her that I would be right over. Our husband, obviously, he had texted him, so he had called me from Pennsylvania and told me to get over. I told him I was here already, so mm-hmm. since I've been here, she's texted me, she's told me that she was in the parking structure,
mm-hmm.
So I have walked by the parking structure, which we actually have two DOT officers there.
Mm-hmm.
They have notified me that the Navy personnel have the hospital secured from the inside. Obviously, they're on the outside out here, so the parking structure appears to be safe at this point.
Okay, and here's what I'd be curious to know. Maybe you can tell us what your daughter said. When you're in one of the rooms, they say hunker down, get under a desk, make sure the door's locked. Was there any direction for people in the parking garage? Is she in her vehicle, below her vehicle? What do you know about how they're staying safe?
Okay, she's in the vehicle. The windows are extremely tinted. It's going to be hard for anybody to see. They would be able to catch some movement if they were to pass by. So she's in the back. The van is pretty big, and mm-hmm. she and my grandson. So she's down low. Actually, I advised her I don't want her to call me. You know, don't do too much movement with texting just right now because everything's clear. I see a lot of Navy personnel and nurses down below, which means obviously the area is pretty secure for right now.
Okay, you mentioned your grandson. How old is he?
He's 8.
He's 8 years old. And
yes.
How's his morale? Did she say anything about how he's doing?
She didn't say anything about that. I didn't hear him in the background. I guess by them knowing I'm here, that gives him a little comfort.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I've advised them that everything is going to be okay.
Yeah.
It seems, you know, this is the Navy. This is military. You
yeah.
know, I'm proud service. They have this.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's going to be fine.
All right. Thank you for making time for us. I know this is probably a very rough situation. You seem very calm and put together, so thank you.
A little shaky, yeah. But I'm calm. Mm-hmm.
Good. Stay strong for her. Thank you. And stay near us. Let us know what kind of updates you get on this, sir.
I will if I have anything on the phone.
All right. Thank you so much, Juan. Okay, so, again, he is an example of some of the many people here that are not in Building 26 that are also being told to lock down. You heard him say that his daughter is in the parking garage, and she tells him that she is safe. So let me kind of paint a map for you. The parking garage is behind Building 26, and from our vantage point, most of the activity seems to be happening to the left of Building 26 if you're looking at your screen. It's to my right, but it is to your left if you're looking at your screen. We counted about 20 law enforcement vehicles go to that side of the building. Again, I keep reiterating, they didn't have their sirens on, just their flashing lights. We did see two armored vehicles, at least one of them belonging to the Sheriff's Department. So now, crowds starting to build a little bit. Still people staying away from the area, but people like Juan, who may have heard from a family member inside the building, showing up but remaining calm. Dan and Nichelle, you've both said throughout the morning, we have not seen people come running from the building. We have not seen law enforcement go running toward the building. We aren't hearing screams. It is a very quiet scene. Hopefully, that's all good news. We're not hearing confirmed reports of injuries at this point, but again, a heavy United Police presence. We have the San Diego Sheriff's Department. We have San Diego Police. We have the Highway Patrol. We have the military police on scene as well. So everybody working what seems to be seamlessly together. We have seen some people on top of the buildings. We've seen people to this balcony to my right over here. So law enforcement, again, keeping a watchful eye from outside. Again, the main focus on building...
Well, that was live from San Diego. I just happened to stumble onto it while I was doing the show here, but that's just a sample. It's going to just keep escalating. It's going to keep escalating as long as our military forces are all over the world stomping on people. It's going to continue. It's going to get worse. Tick, tock, tick, tock. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. Keep your head down, watch your neighborhood, be ready for anything.
We're all gonna die here. These are cops!